You tell the story through the eyes of Miss Eva, who happened to be your great aunt, and she, on the occasion of her 107th birthday, she sort of lets out some of the details. Is that what helped fill it in for you?
Well, that was the way to tell the story in a romantic setting. I mean, it's a story of inspiration, and it's a story of romance and intrigue. It follows Eva from a teenager who was picked out of the audience to her metamorphosis into the star and wife of legendary showman Black Herman. I mean, she quite literally lived every woman's dream of the day in the 1920s. The theme was come to the big city, become a star, and marry the man of your dreams.
And she did all that.
Yeah, of course, in real life, there aren't always happy endings. Because he died. They spent 17 years together, but again, he died tragically on stage in 1934.
Let's start telling the story of who Black Herman was, how big he was. Now, he was just a young man when he was working with somebody else who was pretty big in that field.
Yeah, well, he was 16 years old when he started apprenticing with Prince Herman in, I think that was about 1908. In 1911, Prince Herman died and left Black Herman left Ben Rucker to carry on the show, and he changed the name to Black Herman. Now, what he had done is he combined the European magic with the African hoodoo and folk religion and took a traveling show on, because these were the days when they traveled the circuit all over the South and from town to town, and mixed gospel with his show and was very successful, so much so that after World War One, he was able to hire actresses, assistants, and perform all of the arduous performances that the European magicians during the day. And this is a part of the story I like to call the Perils of Eva, where she was, this is where they met, and this is where she was perforated in the cabinet with swords, sawed in half, and levitated through the air.
We'll definitely get into what the show was, but I want to stick on how big he got. I mean, starting out at 17, he's not automatically a star. It had to take some time, but
no.
Eventually he becomes, well, you describe it. How big did he get?
He was so big that in some areas, from the reports that I received from my studies, he could just transcend the Jim Crow laws, which meant you had to put on a different show for different audiences. Even Bessie Smith had to put on one show for white audiences and one show for African-American audiences. Black Herman, probably because of the mystique of magic, was able to transcend that, and he had thousands of people show up at his performances.
In the book, you sort of describe the different track that he followed, the cities he went to perform on a schedule. When he performed in the South, though, I mean, there were problems. There were concerns, right?
Always. Yeah. And that's one thing that comes clearly through the history books. And there's not much written on the subject. There was a breakout work by a gentleman who researched for 20 years and promised one of the African-American magicians, a Fatigue Sanders, who played the USO tours in World War II in the 50s. He grew up after Black Herman. But he promised him he would go all the way back to, I think it's Box Brown in the 1830s, who mailed himself from Virginia to Philadelphia to escape slavery and become an ardent crusader against slavery. But that was one of the first times where African Americans performed a trick, if you will.
I said in the beginning of this program 2 hours ago that he was sort of a contemporary of Harry Houdini. Is that stretching it a bit, or
not
was
at all? He was the Black Houdini. And in fact, some reports that I have say that the gentleman who taught Black Herman and Eva the buried alive trick also taught Houdini the handcuff escape act in 1898. His name was Wilmot Barclay, or Professor Maharaja, but we could talk about him in a few minutes too, I guess, if you want to set it up first.
Oh, absolutely. We will talk about him. Okay, so in the South, he's got Jim Crow laws. He could play to, I guess, segregated audiences or black audiences.
Right. That was his primary audience, because African Americans were steeped in traditional cultures, in the Bible Gospels and in the conjure or the hoodoo culture of root doctors and chants and everything. So when he put all of this together, he put on a show that was scintillating to them and provided a little hope and levity. Now, Black Herman always carried with him a bag of trinkets that were always able to cure the ills and maladies of the day, if they be psychological or physiological. Some called him a low-cost shrink, if you will, a psychologist to the poor, because he would always try and do something for people and have them uplifting and feeling better about themselves and give them something to make their days a little bit easier.
You had used the term earlier, hoodoo, and I don't know if you mean that in any kind of a negative sense or just as a description, but, you know, in reading the book, I also saw that Black Herman, in addition to being a master showman, would sell these magic tonics, snake oil.
Yeah. In fact, to the end of his days, my mom's cousin talks about as at age six, she remembers the men coming around to get his tonic. Well, it wasn't just snake oil. It was made from a lot of different herbs. And there were proprietary recipes for that, and people swear by the results, just like we swear by ginseng and other things today, which were supposedly, snake oil at one point in time.
Were you able to get the recipes?
Oh, no. Those recipes have gone years ago. The recipe that I and many magicians were interested in was the secret of the buried alive trick, but unfortunately Eva took that with her as well when she passed away last year at age 111. All she would say about the trick was, "Oh, honey, you don't want to know about that." And so we wouldn't press her on it anymore.
So in the South, he had problems. In the North, though, he would basically transcend Jim Crow laws. He would transcend racial barriers.
Well, in the North, Jim Crow really didn't apply very well.
Right, right.
Because you just had a great mixture of peoples. But to just talk to the point about hoodoo for a second, while it has become a slang and a colloquialism, hoodoo actually refers to the ancient, the West African term juju, or to conjure. Now, according to Zora Neale Hurston, who was a cultural anthropologist, hoodoo was mispronounced by Europeans as voodoo, V-E-A-U-D-E-A-U, or voodoo. And it just simply means being able to conjure or use roots to make potions and magic spells.
And tell me this, you know, you mentioned that he appealed to a wide variety of audiences, especially in the North. You would have thousands of people show up. So would he be characterized today as a wealthy man to become wealthy?
Well, he was at the time. He had a mansion in New York City. Once he moved to New York to become part of the Harlem Renaissance, he was initially in Chicago as of 1918, 1917, when he became successful and brought on my great aunt. They lived in Chicago, and this is an interesting point. This probably begins the beginnings of his political activism, because in 1919, there were very vicious riots in Chicago, so much so that the government brought in J. Edgar Hoover to handle the problem at that point. And I think that's what got Herman started on his political leanings. And by the way, his theatrical leanings increased at that time, too. He invented something, apparently, from what I get, called the Asira levitation, which is illustrated in the 1939 movie Charlie Chan at Treasure Island, which borrows heavily from the couple's lives. Now, this is where he pretends to hypnotize a subject, places her on a table, and covers it with a cloth. Then the table is levitated into the air and suddenly disappears.
But he started with something much similar, card tricks, right?
Yes. Most magicians started with card tricks. Even Houdini, before he became the King of Escape, started with card tricks. And this was the story about Wilmot Barclay in 1898. Harry Houdini was billing himself as the King of Cards, and Wilmot Barclay showed him how to escape from any lock. According to the one source that I have, the History Channel and others cannot confirm that, but that's hearsay, almost. Black Herman himself was a known escape artist. He, on his shows, on stage, he would escape from chains and ropes. Of course, he attributed to his secret Zulu knowledge. But I think part of the trick is to tense yourself up as the chains or ropes are being tied around you. And then as you can relax yourself and loosen the ropes, you tend to wiggle out of them. I think that's how Houdini was doing it, if I'm not giving away any secrets.
So you know the secrets to most of the tricks that he performed?
I do not. I prefer to be the audience. As I said, Black Herman's name was not spoken of in my household for over 40 years, and Eva charged all of her nieces and nephews to get an education and to work hard and to stay away from the stage. Of course, there was one of her nieces that spent 30 years on the Broadway stage, so she ignored the advice, wanting the allure of the thrill of the crowds. Even my mother, I have a picture of her from 1940 where she was taking, not pin-up pictures, but press pictures to show around. But she decided to go back to college after World War II and get an MBA and work as a business career.
Tell me the story about Miss Eva, how she hooks up with Black Herman.
Well, they had gone to see him.
Her sister. Yeah. There you go.
In 1917 or so, she and her sister, who was 1 year older and almost identical in age, and interestingly enough, at 90 years old, at 89 and 90, they still looked almost identical. So they went to a magic show in Mississippi and were picked out of the audience by this great showman. Now, he offered both of them to come on the tour with him, but Eva fell in love and ran away. And it's such a great story because it's so true. I said, oh, my God, when I'm hearing this. Now, you know, 3 days after the first meeting, there was a message delivered to the house inviting both of them once again because he really did fall for them. And Eva, the younger sister, took the message, read it, and threw it in the fire before her older sister knew about it. And then she ran away to be with him and become his wife and become his, well, first his apprentice and then his star and then his wife.